Andor's first of two planned seasons is wrapped, and now we ponder aloud, is it good? Is it great? Is it bad? Plus, does Netflix have another fine film on their hands? Is the recently released Florence Pugh-led The Wonder good, bad, dud? We'll answer those questions on this week's podcast.
An elevator take projection.
Welcome to Taking It Down, a podcast where we cordially unpack TV and sometimes film and sometimes music for our progressive yet busy Alabama people and beyond. If you're beyond, welcome. Hey folks, my name's Blaine Duncan. Taking It Down exists because I used to love the Vulture TV podcast. I listened to it weekly. It went the way of the dodo. And I was like, maybe I could do it. I knew some smart people. They're going to join me in a little bit. Why do I like what I like? Why do I dislike what I like when it comes to TV, movies, books, music? I have an English degree. Maybe that's a little pedigree. I'm a teacher. Maybe that helps. I try to give a little insight worthy of your time. And I'm a classic kid who grew up in the 80s in front of a television and went to the movie theater every weekend for entertainment. My ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints here with me. Almost every week, we'll have Adam Morrow, who's an erudite musician with time spent on the road and a penchant for literature while in the van. We've got Donovan Reinwald, a media specialist. He's got encyclopedic knowledge of film and more. He's also taught here and there. We've got Miss Natalie Morrow. She's going to be your first person to hit up on fantasy, sci-fi, comics. She keeps us in check on trashy reality TV, and she knows her Beyonce. That's what you'll get from us. You'll get the obscure and the obvious on some weeks. Only one co-host this week, though. It's Thanksgiving. We're coming out of Thanksgiving, still traveling. So let me introduce one of my most intelligent friends. It's Mr. Donovan Reinwald.
Great to be here, Blaine.
We've been gone a long time.
Yeah, I looked in. For those of you who don't know, Riverside lets you put in a name, and we usually try and choose a different one each time. And the last one I had put in was No TV and No Beer Make Homer Go Something Something. So that must have been pre-Halloween.
It was the weekend before Halloween. It's not uncommon for us to take a week off, but I think it's been 3 or 4 weeks. It's been a month, I think, for listeners to have heard from us. Should I get into that?
I think you can unpack it if you feel like it. There's not...
I don't mind.
It's more like it's been just kind of one thing after the other.
It really has been. So the first week, and this is not a joke, we were in the middle of recording an episode. Inadvertently, completely by accident, I had... My schedule got a little haywire, and I skipped two antidepressive medication rounds. Totally by accident. I was not trying to achieve anything or plea for help or anything. And it hit me, and I'd forgotten that I'd missed them. And it hit me that mid-episode, I was like, why am I doing this? This is trash. We're not accomplishing shit that's important. I'm never doing this again. And I shit you not, Donovan, you were mid-sentence about the patient.
I was just like, I think we were talking about the patient.
It was me and you. It was you and I. We were talking. And you were mid-sentence, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. So everyone out there, if you are on medication, take your medication. Be careful with it. Don't try to wean off of it cold turkey, because that's almost what happened to me, but not really. I jumped up and took my medicine and went to bed and just had a completely utter round of severe depression, I guess. It's also right around the time when the clocks, we would have changed clocks, and it hit horribly. And then the next week I got physically sick. And then, like, the next week, my wife was physically sick. And it was just one thing after another. And when you go through that much, you do wonder how much of your hobby stuff, I guess, is worth anything when your physical and mental health are not so hot. A lot of us have been there.
Yeah, that was one of the... It's funny that it happened during the patient, just because one of the things we talked about with that show was how compelling it was to any of us to anybody who's struggled with any kind of mental problem, because it does feel really relatable. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think hopefully all of you out in listener land are glad to have us back.
I hope so. If you are a listener, and I'm not, this isn't a setup for a plea for help or anything, but if you are a listener, let us know. Let us know that you listen. Sometimes we think we're speaking to the void. If you're new, you know, we've got a few new people involved on a lot of social media lately, and thank you. We want to hear from you. We want to make it a conversation and not just you listen. And yeah, just hang in there, folks. It's, I don't know what else to say. I'm not a doctor. And just for clarification, I'm not a serial killer either. My symptoms are not the level of the patient, if you've seen the show, which we liked. Go watch it. It's good.
It was good.
Do we dare say anything about Twitter?
If we say anything about Twitter, will we not be found? You know what? Let's say something about Twitter.
Because I'm interested. I really am. And I'm interested in what you have to say, and I'm interested in what's happening with Twitter, too.
I'm just interested in... He had to do nothing. He inherited something that worked, and he had to do nothing.
I don't think it was making money, though.
No, I mean, it's never made money, but that's his fault for buying it. Mm-hmm. But like, the platform worked, and like every, and he had to do absolutely nothing, mm-hmm. and maybe he could figure out a way to monetize it, and mm-hmm. like, everything from the blue checks to, like... The content moderators to putting old Kanye back on is just like
and Trump
and Trump's
back.
Is he going
to retweet it? I don't think.
Is he going to reinstate the Babylon Bee? Are you familiar with the Babylon Bee?
Wait, was it banned?
Was it banned? Yeah.
No, why? Tell me this story.
For spreading misinformation and it was one of the things that got Elon interested in. Snopes did a fact check on it. It got banned for spreading misinformation.
But it's a satire site, so can it spread misinformation?
Liberals can call the Babylon Bee garbage. Yep, they're back.
I guess I'm just eager for a social media change of some sort. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I mean, I went ahead and the Alabama Take as a whole, not this show, is on Mastodon and Post. Post News, just Post, I think it's called. Post being the newest. And they're both almost the same. They're most almost. They're both very early versions of Twitter in their view, but both very clean. Post kind of looks like WordPress a little. Like it allows you to just write a lot, and I think that they may want to think about fixing the character limit there, because I think that's part of what makes Twitter appealing is you get short stuff quickly. Yeah. And there's something to be said about having to fit your thoughts into the parameters.
So I Googled that. This is from Wikipedia, which is usually pretty accurate when it comes to this stuff. And what they actually got, so they had been flagged for spreading misinformation, but what they got kicked off Twitter for was tweeting the Babylon Bee's Man of the Year is Rachel Levine, referencing the U.S. Secretary for Health, who is a trans woman. So a not cool and not funny joke that got them that Twitter said suspended went against its rules for hateful speech, and Elon Musk wants these guys back. He just can't stand it.
I think that warrants a lot of people getting on their ass. I don't know if that warrants getting kicked off a platform. That's cruel.
They had done other stuff too.
Yeah, I guess it's
all cumulative.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. When it comes to something like that, there's more to the story. I don't know. If Twitter's down, you can find us. You can find the Alabama Take, at least, on Mastodon and Post. Post is slowly growing.
I still haven't jumped over yet. Because I've been trying to use Twitter less.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But I had, like, a good network setup of, like, college football guys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I just, mm-hmm. I need the service that will just replicate all the work that went into setting up my network.
That's it to a T, because that's what I want to join Mastodon and Post just to see which one's going to inch out the other. So far, neither. Well, let's get into some big segments. I got to say, I'm excited to hear what you were going to give in terms of thoughts about this Netflix movie, The Wonder.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I really am excited to talk about this. Just in case anyone hasn't listened, what we commonly do is get in a group text with other co-hosts. There are two more co-hosts. We'll get in a group text. We'll ask what one another's watching that week, or what we might watch, or what's on our radar. And then we decide what kind of movie, show, book, song, music, album that we might get into a little bit that week. And that's usually it. We don't go beyond that. So when I tell Donovan, that wasn't fraudulent. That wasn't a lie when I say I want to hear what you guys say, because I don't know what he's going to say. But a quick setup for anyone wanting to know more before we do spoilers, because if you're a listener, what we do is we'll give you general things, and then I'll we'll give you a spoiler so you can figure out if you want to watch it or not. So here's for the hey, should I watch it crowd, is it worth my time? The Wonder, it's the name of it, The Wonder, Netflix film based off of the novel by the same name by Emma Donahue, which flew right by me, I think, around 2015. I didn't even realize she had released that book. She was the author of Room as well, which I read and kind of disregarded her as an author. Shame on me, because this one looked good. This one looked good. Thank you, Frankie, for knocking that over. The movie's directed by Sebastian Lelo, perhaps? He directed Disobedience and A Fantastic Woman, neither which are not as well known as this one.
Yeah, I've never seen either.
Me either, but Disobedience sounds interesting.
Yes.
This film, The Wonder, stars Florence Pugh as a 19th century British nurse brought to rural Ireland about a decade after the famine to watch over a young girl who stopped eating for really long enough to be alive. That's your setup. That's all I knew. Now, before we skip to spoilers, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways, no thumbs. Whatever you want to do here.
I think that this is definitely a movie that you kind of have to be in the right mood for. It is somewhat sedate and slow, and it moves at its own pace. If you are wanting to see yet another fantastic performance by Florence Pugh, thumbs up all the way. If you're not necessarily in the mood to watch a movie that's a little bit slower and is a little bit, kind of takes its time getting to its ideas, then this is probably a thumbs sideways movie. So this is I think this movie was a thumbs up for me with qualifications.
I'm going to push back against some of those thoughts.
Okay.
And I'll do so vaguely.
Bring it on.
First. Yeah, a mild push. If you've seen my stature, you know the push will not be harmful. I was entranced.
Oh, really?
I felt like it turned the screw at such a, we'll talk about the pacing, it turned the screw at such a steady pace that its slowness I never felt. Although I did read, some people would say that was the way with the book, that it was a little too slow paced, but they liked it. I thought this movie was fantastic. And it's, now I don't, these last couple of years, I haven't watched a ton of movies. I used to watch a ton of movies. These last few, I've done more television research and thinking. But this is the best movie I've seen this year.
Wow.
Released this year.
High praise.
But again, I don't really have a select bit to go with. I go crazy thumbs up with this one, or whatever we want to use as a guide. You mentioned Florence Pugh. A lot of the reviews are going to mention Florence Pugh's performance as the reason to watch. And certainly.
This movie had it all. It had Florence Pugh. It had dresses. It had moody walks in the Irish countryside.
Oh, let's get into spoilers. I recommend it. Donovan recommends it if you are kind of chilled out, I think, is how I interpret it.
I think so. Yeah, if you're looking for an action movie, which I hope no one would be looking for an action movie and think, wow, The Wonder is what I want to watch.
1862 Ireland.
Even if you're looking for something, it does, Blaine's totally right. It moves at its own pace. That's interesting that people said that about the book, too, because I know Emma Donahue helped adapt the screenplay, mm-hmm. or helped adapt Pure Book into a screenplay for The Wonder.
I think she did the same for Room, too.
Did she? I didn't know that.
I think so. Did you read Room?
Nope.
Yeah.
By the time it hit my radar, so many people had so many opinions about it that it was just like, I feel like I can just take part in the discourse without having to read it. It's kind of, have you ever seen the movie Metropolitan?
I never have.
There's a character there that the main character, our protagonist, he's like, I never read the books. I only read the reviews of books. That way I can know all about the books and whether they're good or not.
I'm guilty of that on some occasions.
So Metropolitan is worth your time if anyone is. It takes place right after Christmas season. It's kind of seasonally appropriate. But that's not the movie we're talking about.
Nope. Yeah, spoilers. Spoilers here from here on out. I watched this movie the night before Thanksgiving. It felt okay to do that.
That's when I watched it, too.
This is a movie about women, and I think I read that right this time. Sometimes I don't. But it's about men dictating women, men using women, men wanting their women to be saints, yet take orders from them. And I thought, what an amazing movie for our day and age, with particularly with Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. This summer, but even beyond, it really was a good movie on its own, but it also was good in that it was explorative of our lives or the reverberations of that kind of thinking.
There were like some scenes with the panel of men where she's kind of, you know, all the men are on one side of the table, she's on the other side, and she's trying to convince them to stop this observation, which is killing the girl. The girl seems to be finally starving to death because she's being observed 24/7. And Florence Pugh has figured out how the girl was getting nutrients from this point. So she's begging them to stop it, and not a one of them will accede. Mm-hmm. I thought that those were if that's the theme, you know, if that's one of the themes that you picked up, I thought that those were some of the more powerful scenes based on that theme. And this is unfortunate. I don't think I can get it across in words. So much of this movie was not words. It was the way it was shot and the look and feel of it. So
really was
the power differential between those men, mm-hmm. and Florence Pugh's character really doesn't come through unless you watch it. You got to mm-hmm. watch it.
Yeah, she's rimrod straight, not allowed a chair.
Yeah.
And none of this is ever communicated. You just have to see it. She has to stand. They're much more relaxed. They have a table. They all have chairs. They tell her what to do and expect her to do it. That's definitely what it wants you to think. Elizabeth Wright is her character's name, Lib, she eventually goes by. Because there's a little bit of identity used as a motif here. Who are you?
Absolutely.
And who do you say you are?
Who's, what's your... She and Anna. Thank you. Now I can't remember any characters. I was going to say Nan because.
Well, that's who she becomes.
Yeah.
The little girl. Yeah. That's, we're getting into the ending there, but that's fun.
But there's that kind of, you know, it starts out playfully where she's like, "What did your family call you?" Anna asked Lib, "What did your family call you?" And kind of starts making up names for her, and she says, "If you do that for me, you know, I'm going to have to do that for you." Mm-hmm. And Anna says, "You know, then I wouldn't be me." And that kind of is a scene that gains much more resonance by the end. When
yeah.
we're hugely into spoiler territory here, though, but when she allows Anna to become Nan, or facilitates Anna becoming Nan. Mm-hmm. I like the way you put it, is that it's kind of a who do you say that you are?
Who do you say you are versus who people want you to be?
Yeah.
Those men wanted her to be a saint and were willing to let her die for it because they probably had the logic to figure out this is not Jesus-induced. This is not the great divine. This is not providence that she's not eating
yeah.
this fast.
Yeah, they wanted her to be a saint or a scientific... I thought that the This is really neither here nor there, but the doctor character is kind of interesting because mm-hmm. he's going along with it, but he's like, he thinks that maybe she's found some new way to absorb nutrients. So it was, you know, it's not just religious wing nuts. It's everyone's kind of coming together to be a little bit of a wing nut about this. I was going to say, that's really neither here nor there. I just thought, you know,
I think
it's interesting.
Though. Well, it's also a story about, for me, and I think of the book and movie, To Kill a Mockingbird, because I'm reading it again.
Mm-hmm.
It works on so many different levels, all to create one big story. And this one did that a little bit for me, because there is the idea of women and why men try to control them or say who they are. There's this idea of identity wrapped in that. And then also there is the science versus religion or reason versus the spiritual. And you, like you just said, which I really hadn't considered a lot, if in more modern terms, it's like science versus religion versus the Christian Science Monitor version of all of that. You know, even that gets a say in the, which is really cool. And kudos to Emma Donahue, assuming that's in the book. I guess I really like movies when I understand them, I think, as well as I understood this one, where every shot, every her standing in front of the men rather than getting a chance to sit, the nun standing rather than getting a chance to sit, the pictures on the wall. When everything I see ties into what I think it's about. I've always loved that from a movie.
Yeah, and this movie was very self-consciously about the things that you kind of brought up, about stories, about the stories. I didn't love it, but it kind of started in a set on a soundstage.
Yeah, let's unpack that. Critics seem to be, they use this to really take away whether they liked it or disliked it, was the framing device, yeah. Which you said starts on a soundstage. So talk to me about your feelings on how it began and ended.
Well, for one thing, I was totally fascinated by it because we'd been having these same discussions when we were talking about a Marriage Story with Oscar Isaac and...
Scenes from a Marriage.
Thank you. Marriage Story.
I got those two confused
different.
This morning. That's so funny you mentioned it. I got those two.
Marriage Story is something completely different. Yeah, Scenes from a Marriage, which did the same thing. Also the one that we talked about earlier this year with David Thewlis and about the couple that murdered, she murdered her parents. And it self-consciously wanted to lift the veil. Like this movie did too. And so I guess I think it was a little unnecessary. I think that you could have, I don't know that you needed to underscore the artificiality of what you were watching in order to get your point about stories across. But maybe on the flip side, maybe it is, I don't know, maybe it is a good framing device in that it helps us remember that none of what we see is real. These aren't real people that we're talking about. This didn't really happen, and so perhaps it helps these people transcend the specific and get into more, kind of like what you've been talking about, where they're almost archetypal.
You've made me think of three things that I really loved about it. Number one, it hooked me.
Okay.
And I thought, what the fuck is going on? This is not what I thought this movie was. Number two, it allowed for one of the sisters, one of the older sisters, midway through the movie to talk to the camera briefly. And that freaked me the fuck out as a viewer. I thought, usually breaking the fourth wall, which we talked about a lot lately.
We have.
Is for comedy or to get you in on the joke. This time it pushed me out of the story.
It does.
In a way that was jarring and scary. And the third thing that it did was it reminded me that this is also a story about stories. You can dictate the story you want to tell. Now, did you have to put it in the warehouse where they shot? No, you're right about that. But it was also really cool to see that's how they recreate a ship.
Now that
I was like, what? That's how you do a ship?
Just from a craftsman standpoint, it was cool. Yeah. And kind of actually the whole movie, one of the things, I was kind of playing a game, like, is it a soundstage or not? Because there's some shots that are obviously, like, they're just outside, they can't be on a soundstage. And then there's the inside, and it kind of makes you think, like, what am I not seeing in say, Anna's bedroom or whatever.
Yep.
I think what you said, it's a story about stories. That's kind of what I was stumbling towards or trying to get at when I said mm-hmm. that the characters transcend the specific.
Mm-hmm. It's like Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried.
Yes.
In a way. There's that one story where they're talking about telling. Yeah.
So much
did
of
you
this. I'm sorry. I was just struck. As I'm sitting here talking about this, how much of this movie really was mood, and it was mood based on the way it was, what is shown and what is not shown, the way it's mm-hmm. shot, which is very gloomy. I think mm-hmm. Brian, I can't ever say his last name, Talarico,
I think it's right.
From RogerEbert.com, compared it to almost a horror movie.
Oh my goodness, that's... I was just about to ask you, was the first 40 minutes of this movie not kind of bordering on horror for you?
Yes.
I kept thinking something's going to come out of this girl and she's possessed or, and then of course we learn about 45 minutes in, she's just a normal kid.
Yeah, she's not what, she's not, there's nothing special about her really.
No.
But so much
but
of
horror,
it is just...
still horror in a sense that she is out of control on what's going to be happening.
Yes.
Until the nurse helps her. And I think the score helps to make you get in that frame of mind.
That was another thing that I wanted to mention. Thank you. That was another thing I wanted to mention. It all works together to just build a mood of, and I think there's like one sunny day in this whole film, and even on that sunny day, it still just has this, not depressing is the wrong word, but it just has this mood that I am finding hard to put into words.
Ominous in a way?
Yeah, that's a good word. Ominous. It feels like foreboding. Something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was it. When you have a movie set in the 1800s about religion, I immediately go, this is going to be a little creepy. I know a lot of people won't. A lot of people think religion comforting, but I usually go, this easily could be scary. And then when you say it's a movie about womanhood, religion, science, those things, but then you say it's also a movie about children, I get reminded of my own experience as a child with religion, and that could easily be horror.
Yeah, religion is scary.
It is. The unknown, yeah.
Yeah, just trying to wrap your mind around, as a kid, like ideas like eternity, infinity. Mm-hmm. Also, there's there's the more specific layers of things we put on. Like, I was convinced, Jesus was coming back any moment. So I'd be like, Jesus, please don't come back before Christmas.
Just let me ride that tricycle.
Yes. Seriously.
No, it is about children. We have Florence Pugh, who should be lauded for this role, especially when she's showing us the laudanum addiction. To grieve her own child specifically, and maybe her husband a little, but that performance works so well when you add that in. I think her performance works well as Rimrod and kind of distant and disinterested, but then you find that she is also in need of love, just a little, but she's also in need of something to fill a hole of her loss of her kid. It's a touching couple of scenes where she grapples with that through addiction.
I can't say enough good things about what Florence Pugh does, and it is part of what makes it so good is how not flashy it is. we've all seen the like capital A acting, right? Like that Joker movie, right? That one. Yeah. Joaquin Phoenix won him an Oscar, and that was capital A acting, right? Like that was like. Look at me, camera's on me, I'm doing something, I'm being weird and grotesque, watch me. And there's none of that from Florence Pugh. It's very naturalistic.
Yeah, it kind of is. I think there might be a moment or two where you think, she's going to play this one note, but then there's a few more scenes involved, the movie works on, and you're like, no, this is a... If she's working within one color, she's giving you variations of that color.
Yeah.
Like if she's working in purple, she's giving you violet. She's giving you purple. She's giving, but it really works.
And I think those scenes where the mask, if we can call it a mask, where the mask slips, is so important.
Sure, we're talking identity here.
Yeah, it's so important to that because it allows you to see that she is acting a role.
The nurse herself is.
Yeah. She has to act a role just as much as anyone else does. It's her job.
Maybe the movie says that children is the utmost importance. Don't pay attention to what science is saying or religion's wanting them to be. Just get them fed and healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
Which makes sense to Emma Donahue's writing.
Yeah, it was, I found it kind of, like the ending itself is a little... It almost has a dreamy feeling to it, where I found it a little implausible, but it is very sweet, and the idea, and it kind of when she allows or facilitates Anna to becoming Nan, she also allows or facilitates her to become a little girl who nothing bad has ever happened to help her. So she's helping Anna play a new role.
And it allows her to be a mother. She gets to play the role of mother again rather than nurse. And I just loved this movie. It clicked on every level. Everything seemed purposeful. And whether or not you like the framing, that would be the... I could see that, but I was cool with it.
I do think everything was purposeful. That's a good way to put it.
I'm a fan. If you watched it, let us know what you think, or if you made it this far, you really should. We didn't even talk about the journalist guy.
No, Will, right? He was a little underutilized, I think.
Yeah, I think to use him anymore would have lengthened the movie to that, would have stretched it to that point where you're thinking, why is it dragging?
That's true. Because it was already a slow movie.
It is a slow movie. It's a calming slow. It's almost a horrific, foreboding slow. But
yeah, I would say there's slow does not necessarily mean boring.
No, it does not. Or bad, right, yeah. Let's go into a break. I recommend a movie. I think Donovan does too. Let's take a break. We're going to talk a little about Andor on the other side. We're back. Donovan and I, like many others across country, have finished the first season of Andor, headed up by Tony Gilroy, and starring Diego Luna for the most part, though Stellan Skarsgård and Genevieve O'Reilly did some heavy lifting throughout the season. I think I want to focus mainly on the last episode, though anything from the first season's at play here. We'll leave a little room for our sister podcast, We Are Star Wars. They get into the nuts and bolts of what this means in Star Wars canon and beyond. And I think Donovan might stick to the last episode a little. But with no spoilers involved, what did you think about season one as a whole?
Toot toot. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I hear something.
That's the Andor train pulling into the station, and baby, it turns out I'm on it.
Dude, how fortuitous of us to get a movie that's one of my favorites of the year and a show. That was one of my favorites of the year.
We talked about. I'm sorry, I totally cut you off. Go ahead.
No, very similar to opinions. I think coming. If you would have told me in January, February that the best, most in-depth, most emotional look at what America can be in its worst moments, would come from a Star Wars show, I would have laughed you out of the room.
And I think, you know, we kind of talked about our initial reactions were kind of like, oh, it's good that they released all first three episodes at once because this is a little slow. It's a little boring. What's going on? I think once I figured out that their structure was, and I didn't figure this out on my own. Somebody pointed it out for me that their structure was mini arcs. Mm-hmm. Once I started watching it in terms of mini arcs, then I really dug it. And I totally agree with you that it is about America, and it's about sometimes America. I was watching this last episode and thinking, like, the Blue Lives Matter crowd should be furious at this episode because of what it says about policing, what it says about just the way that the authoritarian crackdown on citizens' freedom to assemble and freedom of speech. And it seems to be more one of the assembled crowd does in fact throw a bomb that kills security personnel, and the show seems to be more on the side of even though they kill Imperials, it seems to be much more on the side of the people of Ferrix than our stand-in for law and order, which is the Empire.
Yeah. It's a movie. It's a show about British and American colonialism as well.
Oh, and, yeah.
The lasting effects of that.
Somebody pointed out the prison sequences were perfect for to kind of showcase the prison industrial complex in America.
My God, it was. Because I can't get my head around the prison industrial complex in America. And I've made a little effort. I've read a few longer pieces from newspapers, though no book or anything. And that show, Andor, those three or four episodes where he is imprisoned for nothing, literally nothing, walking. If they'd only known who he was, he really would have been in trouble. But
yeah,
he was a nobody hiding flying under the radar of the law, gets arrested for literally nothing, walking around, and gets six years in prison. And the only thing you could have done was maybe made him black rather than he is a what is it? Is he of Mexican descent?
I believe so.
Okay, so make you know having Diego Luna as a Mexican American, and he may just be Mexican. Donovan, you can correct me.
I believe he's Mexican.
Great actor, by the way, Diego Luna. Did not get to see this from him in Rogue One, except in smaller glimpses. So kudos to having
his
show.
He's really pulling off a kind of understated performance, too. But there's moments where he absolutely gets you, like during the prison sequences. I know we're going to talk mostly about the last episode, but the prison sequences, I thought he had some of his finest acting, especially, mm-hmm. you know, when at the end when he looks at the end of the second episode of that arc, he looks at
Andy Serkis' character,
Kino Loy. Kino Loy, and he says, "How many are there?" And just the way he says it, the urgency with which he says it, just I thought was great. And then, of course, Kino says, "Never more than 12." And you're about ready to run through a wall because you know something cool is going to happen.
And that's, I think that's how that episode ends.
That's how that episode ends, yeah.
I'll praise this show for the majority for two reasons. Number one was that Tony Gilroy, whether he knew it or not, recognized that fans of Star Wars are now adults and they want to see what was it we were supposed to be scared of.
Yeah.
We were told and not shown when we were kids. Other than maybe some Darth Vader stuff. He was a little scary maybe for kids. And we were told and not shown. And the second thing is, you and I had a very blatant conversation after the first three episodes, and we said, okay, well, what makes this the adult Star Wars? Because we've heard rumors this is supposed to be the adult Star Wars.
Yes.
And I think it's the unsentimentality of it. Because when he looks back at Kino, any other show would have brought that guy back, or you would have known for sure he was captured again so that Cassian can go rescue him in season two or something. I don't know that we'll ever return to his story, and that's the way it should be.
I think that's great. The moment that they're separated from each other, you know, they are, and even the way it's shot, he just says, "I can't swim," and then we never see him again.
It's a gut punch.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in your, take your pick on another show, The Mandalorian maybe even, where you know, oh, he'll come back and rescue him, or he'll put on his jetpack and go fly him off.
I think that this show, the other thing that Tony Gilroy and team, I pretty much every episode I've looked up to see what Tony Gilroy's had to say about it, and he's very good about crediting his co-writers. But cool. This show is just smarter about people than your average Star Wars show. And it does such a great... You mentioned it shows you what we were supposed to be afraid of. Just the creeping fascism of the Empire is scarier than the Death Star, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. It also shows you how people react to that. Some people get in line with it. Some people love it. Some people are part of it. And then you have guys like the young man who writes his manifesto. You know, of course you would have like politically minded young people trying to undercut the Empire. And we never see things like that in other Star Wars movies and shows. Mm-hmm. And it feels more, I mean, even though it's, you know, it's a space story, mm-hmm. It feels more real.
Do you think this is what George Lucas kind of sort of wanted with way back with the prequel episode one, Phantom Menace?
You know, that's a good question. Because definitely, you know, George Lucas has always liked his TV serials too much, I think, to go this level of grim and gritty.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that well, maybe grim's not the right word, but it certainly is gritty.
It's granular. I'll say it's definitely that.
Yeah.
Because we get Genevieve O'Reilly as Mon Mothma. Who would have thought I wanted her story? And seeing her having to cover up with her husband, using her husband at the very last episode, you know, she's got the driver, she knows the driver's peeking in or listening into their conversation, and she basically throws her husband under the bus for gambling, which he's not doing, probably. Mon Mothma, excuse me, Genevieve O'Reilly, just fantastic. It's also adult, you know, I rattled off two things earlier, but it's also adult in that there's a complexity to mm-hmm. who's backstabbing whom, Stellan Skarsgård's character is Luthen.
Oh man,
he was never sure who to give up or let die, or I can't rescue him, or I've got to go kill this guy, or he's gonna expose the rebellion and we'll crumble. So
they've rightly called, you know, he got a monologue where part of what he says is, I'm damned to use the tools of the enemy to fight the enemy. People have rightly called it his, you know, his Emmy submission reel.
Yeah.
I think that this was a show, you mentioned it being complex, and I'm going to put all my cards on the table, dear listeners and Blaine, and say that this was a show that I'm really glad I read reviews for, because I am swayed by reviews, especially if they help me see things that I wouldn't have necessarily seen on my own. And I think that this show was complex enough that I would read a good review and say, like, yeah, they were doing that thing. And they did pull it, and they did pull it off in that way. So this show has been getting pretty universally good reviews, and I admit to being swayed by reviews. But I was really glad I read them, because I think the show holds up to scrutiny.
I do too. And dessert, even in our day and age of one and done, or consume it and move on, it probably would withstand a second viewing.
Yeah, I agree.
So what? Maybe not the first episode or two, but.
What did you think of that last episode? You know, it kind of is the capper for everything that's come before it.
Thought it was fantastic. No complaints, really.
Me too.
I was a little, not disappointed, I was a little sad that they decided to use the final 5 minutes as a little bit of a setup. But it's well known that there's going to be a season two. So
yes.
I suppose I'm very forgiving of that. There's going to be a definite season two, and then that's it. And then that probably will bleed right into Rogue One if they do the same thing.
Supposedly,
they did with Rogue One.
Supposedly, the ending is going to be the beginning of Rogue One.
Which has made me really want to go back and watch Rogue One. I've been watching Rogue One in like 10-minute increments at night sometimes.
Isn't it, this is obviously not Andor, but it is the same creative team, parts of it. Isn't Rogue One great?
So much better than I imagined it was when I first saw it in the theater.
Yeah, and you can definitely see that there was some studio meddling behind the scenes, but even
that's
with
what I think
all
what
that,
I saw when I mm-hmm. when I first saw it, that's all I could see, I think.
Even with all that, just the way it's directed, the way it's acted, the way it's written is still really solid.
Yeah, and it looks good.
It looks great.
Those scenes with Mads Mikkelsen in the first 10 minutes... they're so beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Wherever they're shooting those.
Emily Vandenwerf, who's one of my favorite TV critics, called Rogue One. She said Gareth Edwards' work gave the universe heft. It gave it feel like there was weight and meaning, and made it feel real in a way that other Star Wars movies do not. You know, the sequel trilogy, I think, did not do a good job of giving making us feel like we were in a real world with real people.
Not really.
Which this show did a fantastic job of, making you feel that you were in a real world with real people who can change, you know.
Yeah.
Andor's gone from just kind of, you know, he was looking for his sister, so he's got a little bit, he's thinking about a little bit more than himself, but someone who is mostly just trying to turn the situation to his own advantage, to someone who is able to come back to his home world, try and rescue his friend. Or I guess it's not really his home world, but come back to his home, try and rescue his friend, and kind of try and be the tinder of rebellion, or the sparks that light the tinder of rebellion there.
Well, was the sister bit a little bait and switch?
I'm wondering about that, because we didn't...
Is that a fair complaint if someone makes it?
I think it's fair to say, especially for those first three episodes, and we'll see what happens in season two. But those flashbacks to Andor's life on whatever that moon was, or world was, didn't really seem to have a whole lot to do with anything.
Well, it set up that Marva was kind enough to take care of him.
I mean, it did, but...
The Empire he's got some bitterness toward them, and fair bitterness.
Yes. You know, I think it would have been just as fine if Marva had been his quote-unquote... Well, his biological mother. It would have worked just the same. You know, and they did such a good job. I'm just completely free associating at this point.
Do it.
They did such a good job with drawing Marva and Andor's relationship. And there's one line that's going to stick with me forever. or a long time, where he's like, when you're gone, I'll worry about you all the time. And Marva says, that's just love.
That's beautiful.
It was really actually beautiful.
So you get that from a Star Wars show, and then you get his droid just jerking the tears right out of your eyes.
The bit
when
where
he says, I can't be alone, or I don't want to be alone.
I don't want to be alone. I want Marva.
What? My God. My God. I'll make three quick points, and we'll wrap here.
Okay.
Because we could go on.
I think we could.
One of the things this show did, and Rogue One did, is it made me realize my childhood assumptions that Luke Skywalker and Han Solo were the only people in that universe. It was right. Not true. Like, movies were laser-focused on Luke Skywalker and Anakin and Han and those people, and which was great, and that's what, you know, we wanted. I never thought that you could tell a story about someone else.
And so completely somebody else too, where like those other folks are not even they're not even like nodded to.
And the other thing is I said three. I think I'm going to make two. This is what happens, I think, when you put the adults in charge.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
And I know don't mean exactly what you mean.
Because writers on other shows are obviously adults, but you take a serious approach. You take a serious storytelling approach. And that's what you'll get, no matter if it's in Star Wars or Marvel, or and you could drop all that stuff and still have a good story. So.
And I think this one was helped, too, because it doesn't have to... It can kind of be its own thing. It doesn't have all those expectations of the quote-unquote Skywalker saga and all that. So it just... Mm-hmm. It ends up being sort of a blank canvas where really good writing combines with good acting and cool set pieces and all that kind of... good stuff to create something that is saying more than just, you know, spaceships are cool, lasers are cool.
Yeah, it does that. Tony Gilroy obviously knows I can do that, and I don't have to do any setup either because everybody knows the Empire, everybody knows this. Anyway, that's our show. That'll be it for this episode, Taking It Down. Specifically, is on Twitter and Instagram as Taking It Down Pod. Find us, join us, talk to us. We'll figure out what to do about Twitter, but we're still there. We'll let you know what we're going to cover. We will try to get back into our weekly show. Talk to you later.